following program is brought to you by NYU Winthrop Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, it's the chairman of urology at NYU Winthrop Hospital in New York. Here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome again to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we are live at 1-800-848-WABC. That number again is 1-800-848-9222. So glad you could join me this morning. Wow, what a beautiful Sunday we have. And as many of you know who listen to the show regularly, this is Long Island Cruisin' Day. Today out in Westbury, Long Island, 1400 Old Country Road. There's going to be a fantastic car show. What a great day for it. We've been doing this with Sandy Kane and the Long Island Cruisin' Organization, where not only do they have a great car show, but they are dedicated to the screening of men for prostate cancer. If you come out, you will get a free blood test and information about prostate cancer. Get to meet the wonderful staff at NYU Winthrop. I will be there. Dr. Jonathan Haas and his team from Radiation Oncology will be there. My wonderful staff at NYU Urology will be there. And NYU Winthrop Urology will be there. And it will be another fantastic day. And this year, we have a free raffle drawing for a plasma screen TV. If you decide you want to have your blood taken for the test, you can enter the raffle for free. And we will be able to give you your information for the blood test within a few days. So hope to see you out there. Last year, we screened, I think, about 350 men. And it is amazing each year when we do this, we do find many men with an elevated PSA that require a biopsy, and we are able to detect early stage prostate cancer in so many men. So come out, join us, be with us, 1400 Old Country Road in Westbury, Long Island. Long Island Cruisin' for a Cure. Hope you can be there. This past week was another anniversary, unfortunately, of 9/11. And the I thought it would be time for us to have on the show a wonderful guest. He's been here before, Dr. Mark Wilkenfeld. Now, Dr. Wilkenfeld is the chief of occupational medicine at NYU Winthrop. He's an expert on the medical conditions and from environmental toxins from men and women that were exposed during the days after the World Trade Center disasters. And I thought that I would bring him back on here and talk to us and give us an update about some of the medical illnesses and that have occurred, both medical illnesses and also maybe some psychiatric conditions that are still going on, for perhaps from post-traumatic stress disorder. Good morning, Mark. How are you this morning?
Good, Dr. Katz. How are you doing on this beautiful day?
I'm doing great, thank you. So glad you could join us. I appreciate you getting up early on a Sunday morning. Let me just start out and ask you just a very basic question in terms of the history of 9/11 and medically related diseases. You know, how did the exposure of people that were down there to the dust, to the World Trade Center dust, how does that actually cause medical illnesses there?
Well, that's an excellent question, and this story goes back to the actual day of September 11th, 2001, which was a terrible day in the history of the world. The towers collapsed, and there were tons and tons and tons of debris caused by the dust, both the components of the towers themselves and things like computers and halogen bulbs and capacitors that were in the towers. And we know that there were many, many, many toxic materials, including asbestos, lead, PCBs, and heavy metals within the dust. And our patients, and there are now about 80,000 patients in the medical monitoring program, had exposure both by inhaling and swallowing the dust. And, you know, these heroes ran down without any concern for themselves. They weren't provided with proper respiratory protection. And, you know, they toiled. You talked about the days after 9/11. Very few people realize that the recovery effort, the cleanup, actually went on until the end of May 2002. And the fires burnt until the end of January 2002. So it wasn't days of exposure, it was actually months of exposure. And pretty soon after 9/11, the doctors started to see various diseases that popped up. And the government funded a program for research and treatment of these conditions. Now, how it happened, we're not sure. As isn't the case with many of the chemically exposed people that we see at NYU Winthrop. We know they're sick, but in terms of the actual mechanism, we're not really sure of it. And it doesn't seem to matter right now why it happened. What's important is identifying the diseases and treating them properly.
Recognize, because I guess it's not always so easy to say, well, someone has developed a cancer and they were down at 9/11, and so it must be related. So I guess that's a two-part question. How do you know for sure, with reasonable certainty, that a medical illness was related to 9/11 exposure? And what are the conditions that, I guess there's probably a list of them now, that you see, that you say, well, when you see this patient, oh yeah, well, you were down on 9/11, it must be because of the exposure there.
Right. Well, you know, you've been practicing medicine as long as I have. So we try not to say definitely in terms of causation.
Right. Okay, yeah, not definitely, but with reasonable certainty.
Right. So there's not even a question of reasonable certainty anymore. Based on research and other factors, the government has come up with a list of covered conditions. So if you come in with a certain condition and you had exposure, there's no need to prove it time after time for each individual patient. If it's on the list, which includes things like asthma, reflux, a large number of cancers, which include prostate cancer, if the condition is on the list and the individual had exposure either as a worker or a student or living downtown, then the condition can be what's called certified as covered. Now, the list, if I had to go through all the conditions that were on the list, I'd be here much more than the half hour that you have for your show. So there is a list, there's a website, and it's cdc.gov. /WTC, and all of the conditions that are currently covered are listed. Now, when I say currently covered, this is not a static list. So as research goes on, more conditions can be covered. At NYU Winthrop, we've done studies and published a number of papers showing a new link, which wasn't seen before, between World Trade Center dust exposure and development of neuropathy. Now, that is not as of yet covered, but we're trying to get it covered. And again, if you want to see the list, it's at cdc.gov/WTC.
You know, when you say covered, you know, I would think that most of the people, let's say that they were workers down there, and this is, you know, what, it's 17 years ago, right?
Right.
So many of these workers that were down there, they're, you know, let's say in their mid-40s or 50s, are going to be having Medicare. Or already, or they're going to have some insurance. So is it like you're going to get covered and you're going to get money? I mean, do you actually get money from the government,
right,
for this?
Dr. Katz, that's a great question. So first of all, you know, I was kind of shocked in terms of having insurance and copays.
Copays can be added up a lot. I know that, yeah.
But for medication, I mean, it's really amazing. So once you're in the program and your condition is covered, there is no more out-of-pocket cost.
Okay, that's good.
That's number one, which saves people thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year. The second part is exactly what you say in terms of monetary compensation. So the program was authorized by a bill back in 2010 that the president signed. And by the way, which is another long story, the reason the bill exists is because of advocates, the responders themselves, and what we call the survivors, people that live downtown, in concert with the treating doctors, went to Washington and had a $7 billion bill authorized to provide both medical care and money for what's called the Victims Compensation Fund. So there is monetary compensation available to cover people's losses due to their diseases. So once you're in the program, you can actually apply for both. Now, naturally, in this day and age, the Victims' Compensation Fund is going to run out of money soon, so the advocates themselves are planning more trips down to Washington to try to get additional funding. Because I'll tell you, you know, when I heard the number $7 billion, which covers the program until 2090.
You're talking about $7
billion. $7 billion, not million. I thought that was a lot of money, right? But you're talking about at least 80,000 sick workers and covering their medical expenses and providing basic compensation. It's not that much money. So
80,000 people.
It's so far.
Now, I thought this was just for people that were, you know, first responders and that were working on the pile and on the when the buildings went down. And, you know, I understand days. Now you're saying months after, but it certainly wasn't 80,000 people working, was it?
Oh, you know, we have no idea. I mean, I happened to have the privilege of being down there in September 2001. The number of people that volunteered, and I hear this story in the office day after day after day. It's not just cops and firefighters; it's electricians, heavy machinery operators, laborers, people just by the thousands ran down to help without any concern for themselves. Okay, now in addition to that, you have thousands of people that actually, you don't think of Lower Manhattan as a residential community, but it is. There's thousands of people that lived adjacent to Ground Zero that had heavy exposure. So 80,000 is a vast underestimate of the amount of people that actually had exposure post 9/11.
Now, I can understand, you know, breathing in the dust and getting asthma, like you say, or a lung cancer, let's say. But how does being, you know, breathing in the dust and being down there would cause something like a prostate cancer?
Well,
how does that happen?
Right. That's also a great question.
And prostate cancer, I mean, is so prevalent right now. That's why we're doing all these screenings. Today we're doing a big screening, if you heard, out in Long Island, Long Island Cruising out of Westbury. 1400, by the way, if you're just listening, 1400 Old Country Road, you want to come out and get screened. At least we have some screening tests for cancers, and PSA is the number one way we can detect prostate cancer. But just tell me, I mean, I just don't, and it's so prevalent, prostate cancer, you know, 240,000 men each year. So you get prostate cancer and you were down there. How do you link the two?
Well, you know, the studies in firefighters and others have shown a significant increase in prostate cancer rates.
Yeah.
We also know, you know, what causes prostate cancer. In many cases, we're not sure, but we do know that exposure to carcinogens and changing of the DNA and mutations will increase your rates of cancer, all cancers, including prostate cancer. So how it happens in an individual, I can't tell you. Maybe in a few years we'll know. We do know that the rates are increased, and, you know, Dr. Katz, I want to commend you, by the way, because I know we've sent you patients. People that we see that have prostate cancer are actually available to be under your care. And I can't tell you the amount of excellent feedback we've had about your office.
Thank you.
You know, on behalf of the responders, I'd like to thank you.
Thank you.
But again, it's not important at this point to say why, you know, from my point of view, although it will have implications for the future. It's important to make sure that people know that the care is available, and that they receive the care. And again, your screening programs are outstanding in terms of identifying the cancers early on. I think that's the most important thing right now.
Now, are you starting to see, well, probably not starting to see, but I mean, of course, the psychological effect and on having been down there and seeing all the horrific things that went on down there. And it's like being in a war, let's say, even though it was very quick, you know, but you know, you weren't there for months and months. But well, some of the people that were cleaning up down there were exposed for months and months, and having, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people. I've actually seen a few people in our practice that have post-traumatic stress disorder and other psychiatric illnesses. What's going on there?
Well, you know, you talk about being in a war. We have, you know, responders. When you're a responder, you don't just respond to 9/11. They respond to Sandy, trauma again and again. A lot of ex-military, a lot of cops were, you know, with incredible pre-9/11 stories. The things that were seen down there are beyond, you know, any kind of comprehension of horror. Okay, and, you know, people also forget it wasn't just Ground Zero. If you really, when you start seeing a lot of patients, you see recovery workers that worked at Ground Zero and you know, were digging and found body parts and other kinds of things. Then you have the group of detectives that were working in Arthur Kill's Long Island. So don't forget, this was actually the biggest crime scene in American history. And every bit of debris was actually evidence, was carted off to Staten Island. And detectives, you know, in the beginning they were going through this stuff with rakes and finding just, you know, mementos and body parts and, you know, horrible kinds of things. Then you had a group of workers who had to take the body parts up to the morgue. Now, from a medical point of view, when they opened the body bags, the dust would come out and they would inhale it. That's medically. But from a psychological point of view, you know, you'd open the body bags and you'd see the results of this horrific terror attack. So early on, the psychiatric effects, you know, they became apparent, but you're also dealing with a very tough group of people. And the most common thing I say is, you know, I hear from them is, I wish I could have done more. You have guys running into a fire, men and women running into a burning, collapsing building to help people, and they wish they could have done more. So there was a lot of patients ignoring their own psychological effects. Fortunately, the program has a large psychiatric component, and there is treatment available. But we see a tremendous amount of PTSD and depression.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I've seen it just in my own practice, and I've certainly seen many men. And it's interesting you say also firemen as well, that weren't down at 9/11, but just firemen themselves that are exposed to toxins and dust and things like that. We've seen a lot of firemen that develop prostate cancer. And again, it's hard to know, is it from being, you know, exposed to these things? But, you know, I guess there's enough evidence now, and thankfully there is this bill. There's $9-7 billion. How much money is left there? Do you know?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that you know, they talk about the compensation fund, the amount of money available to compensate people who are ill running out in 2020, unless more money is added.
Well, I'm sure people know about it, but if they don't. And by the way, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Mark Wilkenfeld, who is the chief of occupational medicine at NYU Winthrop and intimately involved with all of the 9/11 workers. Mark, what would you tell people? How can people sign up for the program, or is there a number or a website that people should know about?
Right. So the website, as I said, is cdc.gov/WTC. The federal government number is 888-982-4748. That's 888-982-4748. And if we can ever help you from our office at NYU Winthrop, you're free to call and speak with me or my staff. It's 516-663-8890. And there's several centers. We work closely with the Stony Brook Center of Excellence. There are also centers in Manhattan and in New Jersey. But again, feel free to call me, 516-663-8890.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Dr. Wilkenfeld. And again, you don't have to be sick to be part of the program, right? I mean, you can sign up.
No, you can sign up. So it's a monitoring program. And it's also, you know, there's research involved. The way that we're able to notice that there's increase in nervous system disease in patients is they were coming in for asthma treatment, and they kept, you know, having these nervous system complaints. So I always tell the patients, as much as we're helping them, they're helping us. And again, I want to give you some outstanding feedback. You know, everyone at NYU Winthrop knows that you're an excellent urologist and how good your team is, but, you know, the responders in particular have remarked to me, everyone that I've sent to you has been, you know, impressed by both the excellence of the care and the compassion that you and your colleagues show. So on behalf of the responders, I want to say thank you to you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Mark. I really appreciate the feedback. And also, it's wonderful, and we're so lucky to have someone like you at NYU Winthrop to be our chief occupational program director and running the program. And I know you do a lot of work not only here in New York, but you do a lot of work around the world in this area. I mean, are you still going? You do go to Israel as well,
right? I had the real honor of spending some time in Israel working on various environmental issues and teaching their residents and students. So,
wow.
You know, environmental medicine doesn't know any borders.
No, absolutely not. Well, are there any final thoughts on this, Mark? You want to leave us with?
You know, I'm just like I said, it's a real honor to take care of these people, and you know, thank you for having me on the show. You said that people know about it, and I'm always amazed that every couple of weeks or every month someone comes in and they're new in the program, and they said, well, there's two reasons they don't come in right away. they feel that people are sicker than them, which I want to tell, you know, your audience that this is not a time for deferred treatment, that this is available to everybody. And also, every once in a while, there's a worker or someone that just didn't know about it. So it's still a matter of getting word out and letting people know that this is available. You know, that this is not a benefit. This is something that these people, these workers, these men and women that are American heroes, truly deserve. So I just want to, you know, tell everyone, do not hesitate to get the care or to come in or to call with any questions.
Yeah, and it's available for you. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Wilkenfeld, thank you so much for coming on the show. Greatly appreciate it. I hope you have a wonderful day. Dr. Mark
thank
Wilkenfeld,
you, Dr. Katz.
Chief of Occupational Medicine at NYU Winter. Phone lines are open. We have a few minutes left here on Katz's Corner. It's going to be a beautiful Sunday. You got lucky this year with the weather. For Long Island Cruising for a Cure, it'll be at 1400 Old Country Road in Westbury, Long Island. And we'll be out there with the teams to screen all the men that want to be screened. If you're right, this year we're screening men if you're 40 years and older and have not been diagnosed with prostate cancer. We will be doing a free blood test on you. Frank is on the line. He's been holding on. Are you still there, Frank? Good morning. How are you?
Yes, I am.
Good.
Yes.
How are you? Good morning, sir.
Good. Good morning. The question I have is on PSA. Part of my physical for years, I'm now 60, since I've been 40, I've been testing for PSA, very consistent at 1.5. This year it doubled to 3. My doctor's not too concerned because it's under 4. He says, gee, if it eases your mind, maybe in a month, 6 months, we'll do another one. What's your thoughts on doubling from 1.5 to 3? Is that something I should, you know, go to see a urologist about, or should I just test it again in 6 months?
Well, I guess the question is, you know, do you have any additional risk factors for prostate cancer, Frank? I mean, you've just been listening to Dr. Wilkenfeld, who told us that prostate cancer is on the list of medical conditions that have been documented to occur. So I assume that, or I shouldn't assume, but you were not down there at 9/11, correct?
No, I have no other, and that's the doctor's point, no other risk factors and I don't know if there's a risk factor, I took a genetics test, DNA 23andMe, a while ago, and I actually showed a higher predisposition for prostate cancer, like 25% higher, yet nobody in my family has it, although half my family died at a young age, not taking care of themselves. So that's my doctor's point. I really have no other risk factors.
Right. Well, that's interesting. We do have a urine test that we've been using for several years now that looks at a specific genetic marker. So that's something that if you came to my office and you said, you know, I'm concerned about my PSA, it doubled. And doubling time is something that is of a concern to us. It's not an absolute indicator of prostate cancer or maybe even a need for biopsy because your overall PSA level is still relatively low, Frank, at 3.0 for a 60-year-old guy, that's still considered to be within normal range. But doubling time is something that is one of those, you know, PSA surrogates, PSA, you know, derivatives, let's say, that we look at. So if you had come to me in the office, I would repeat the PSA. I think that's something that you can do because there's always, you know, false elevations and, you know, some of the things that we know that can falsely elevate the PSA, certainly sexual activity, maybe even vigorous bike riding. But there are some other things that have not been well studied or documented in the literature that I personally have seen in my own practice, stress, infections from other causes beyond just the urinary tract infection, which is well known. But I've seen even, you know, patients that have been, you know, undergoing a lot of stress or have been in the hospital for pneumonia or things like that where their body has taken a little bit of a change internally and the physiology changes. That can bump up the PSA. Perhaps it was done in a different lab. That's a possibility as well, Frank. So, yeah, I agree with your doctor. I wouldn't get overly excited, but I would repeat it and I would probably do the do a genetic marker and perhaps just a quick ultrasound of the prostate just to look at the size. And you're not having any other urinary issues, is that right?
No, I'm not.
Yeah. There is another test that we've been using and relying on. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's another blood test, not the test that we're going to be doing today. Today at the screening, we'll just do a standard PSA, but it's called the 4K score. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I'm a regular listener. I've heard you talk about that.
Yes, that's another test that can be done that can give you a number or the likelihood of you not only having prostate cancer, but, you know, which is a risk for all men, but of aggressive prostate cancer. It'll give you a percentage points there. And we're doing that quite a bit at NYU Winthrop. Something to consider, Frank. You know, but overall, my gut would be to repeat the test and to do some basic, maybe some other markers, just to give us a broader range of things and what's going on with you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Katz.
Okay, Frankie?
Okay, have a good Sunday. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for calling. Just a few minutes left here on Katz's Corner. Again, we're doing our prostate cancer screening with Sandy Kane, Long Island, cruising for a cure. Gorgeous day here in New York, so I expect that many men will attend. I want to thank Mark Wilkenfeld for coming on the show. And if you missed the part of the show, you want to listen to previous shows, it's very easy. You can just go and listen to all of our podcasts on our website. That's WinthropUrology.com. That's WinthropUrology.com. And you can, so there's a little section there where you can go on and listen to the previous podcasts. Many of the callers, let's say, you know, I missed the show, or I heard you had a great show the prior week. And I'm really happy to hear that people do continue to listen every week. We signed on a new doctor in our department, Dr. Felix Chung, who just finished a fellowship at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. He's now part of the NYU Winthrop team, and he'll be coming on the show, I think, either next week or the week after to talk about some of the newer ways that we're dealing with male incontinence, as well as male sexual health. So he'll be talking about that. Well, I guess that's the end of the show, everyone. I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you again to my wonderful colleague, Dr. Mark Wilkenfeld, who is Chief of Occupational Medicine at NYU Winthrop Hospital. Have a great Sunday, everybody. Tune in next Sunday. We'll have a great show for you then, every Sunday, here on WABC Radio in New York, 770 AM. Have a great one. I'll see you then. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.